Mush McMush for April 10th, 2024.
And your fucking podcast, like everybody wants to hear what you have to say. Nobody gives a fuck about what you have to say.
Howdy, friends. My name is Cowboy Charlie. I'm playing mighty good. I sing of country music. Come join me if you would. I'm tall and dark and handsome. I'm famous and I'm great. My name is Cowboy Charlie. Come on now, don't be late. Here's a little song called Deep in the Heart of Jersey. Oh, the factory smoke will make you choke. Deep in the heart of Jersey, the city rats run in big packs. Deep in the heart of Jersey, oh, the pizza man says, I no understand. Deep in the heart of Jersey, en Route 17, the traffic there is mean. Deep in the heart of Jersey,
myself. It's like work alone out here. I'm doing a podcast by myself.
Folks, on here. How's everybody doing? So, Easter is long gone. I hope you all enjoyed the episode on Folgies. What the hell did I do? For the Apocalypse and the womanizer Constantine Nicholas, aka Dracula in Provence, or Dracula in Bronza. Nice little quiet day here at, I guess, the apartment. April's apartment. I just kind of like, what's the word? Squat. Yeah, that's it. I don't know if you heard her. Yes, I kind of just take a little patch in this place and, you too. But occasionally, yeah. And since it's nice and quiet and since April's working on things in the bedroom, I was like, why not take a couple minutes and record this? If you hear me drinking, I'm drinking tea, like a gentleman. But tonight we're going to talk about two films from a director, from a producer that many people may not know. Earl Ornsby. He's a man out of North Carolina who pretty much made a name for himself for shooting in North Carolina, kind of known as the redneck Roger Corman. And I decided to talk about two of his films, Wolfman from 1972 and Dogs of Hell, a.k.a. Rottweiler from 1982. Been on a couple of my, family a podcast popped up. We recorded an episode on Hard Rock Zombies for the Douchecast 5K, which is out there. I enjoyed that film. I picked that film. I think it's a well worth film to see. The bi-monthly film kind of watching crew here over at the Tape Hell in Red Bank, I really just see if I can get Chris to show that film. I think he'd have a great time with it. Me and Steven did Red Sun for the Wanted Alive or Preferably Dead, but that episode has not materialized yet. So at some point, I know he's having a lot of issues with just watching his grandson who does not want to sleep. So you can understand that little fucking kid. Cute as can be, but you know, giving his old granddad a problem. Watched a bunch of films. I'm going to hold off on one because me and April are going to come back and do it. We saw Late Night with the Devil. But we want to rewatch it and kind of get all our thoughts out. And it's coming on Shudder next weekend. So probably the next episode, we'll probably have that as like a special. I don't know. I might do three episodes this month. Just kind of get our basics thoughts. Just kind of do a whole spoiler-filled episode of that film. So if you don't want to listen to that, or if you watch the film and you want to have someone else's opinions, you know, we'll tackle that at some point in the next couple weeks. A couple films I've watched in the last couple weeks. I'm working on getting on Daniel's Mustachio Podcastio again. We're going to cover Hot Pursuit, which is a late 80s John Cusack romantic comedy. I don't know when it's going to happen, but hopefully soon. I watched, talking about Tape Hell and his Midnight Madness, we went and saw Suspiria in the theater because he did his year anniversary show. It's really cool that he's been doing this in the same theater for a year. I'm very happy that it's continued and that we have something like this out there in the area to kind of gather everybody. And because I hadn't been to a couple of shows, it's kind of gotten a lot more popular, which is fun. And I can't say anything but nice things about it because it's really great to have something like that in the area for kind of like a nerd like me who likes to see weird films in theaters. So, but we didn't stay the whole time because we went with Sam and her girlfriend and April, and they all kind of binged on, you know, sweets and snacks, and I think Sam and Felicia were exhausted. So we kind of just like, eh. And the film that was at midnight was Inferno. They're also doing Evil Dead 1 and 2 in the other theater. So we ended up watching Inferno on our own through Shudder a couple of days later. And I still prefer, you know, Inferno over Suspiria, but I like them both. We watched Suspiria in Italian, which I don't know how anyone else feels this way, is that all those Italian films, those horror movies anyway, a lot of them were not dubbed with sync sound, so it really didn't make sense of like whatever release you watch. And for some reason, for me, Suspiria always feels slower in the Italian than it does in the English. I don't know why. Maybe because they're just kind of spitting so much shit out in the English dub to try to make it look like they're talking to each other. But just like, it's that kind of thing. I just don't find it needs to be in Italian, but I understand why. Because I think when he showed it a year ago, he showed it in Italian. So, I mean, he showed it in English. So, like, why not show it in Italian? And, like, that second theater has become, like, the Island of Misfit Toys. Like, let's watch something really crazy because I think this weekend coming, he's showing Night of the Comet and Chopping Mall in the main theater. In the second theater, he's showing High Tension and Martyrs. So two of these French extreme films of the last 15, 20 years. But, you know, like it's kind of that, it's become that. I think he did Begotten, you know, a couple weeks prior. So it's like, you know, I think right before Easter, he did Begotten in that theater. So it's like, holy shit, right? Didn't get to go to that, but, you know, whatever. I watched Leo. This is a Bollywood film. It's on Netflix. It is, I'm trying to remember what movie it's a remake of. Because it's a Cronenberg movie. It's about, you know, a guy who lives in this kind of small town, owns a restaurant or like a coffee house. And these people come in to kind of rob him, and you find out that maybe he is actually the son of this, you know, of this kind of, fuck, I can't think of his name. And it doesn't give you any of like the stuff like, oh, it's based on this, because it's like, fuck. Which movie is that? Fuck. Let's see if the thank you's in fucking IMDb. Gimme. So I don't think so. Fuck. Additional crew? No. Let me see. I'm going to look this up real quick. So if you hear my phone, it's why. Because I don't remember now. No, not that film. It's early, but it's not that film. Oh, A History of Violence. That's it. That's the thing. Why couldn't I fucking get that damn name out of it? So this is like a Bollywood remake of A History of Violence. But it's 3.5 hours long. It's a typical Bollywood film. And it was, at the time, last year, it was one of the bigger films out of Bollywood. So when it came here, it was like, oh yeah, you should check it out. Just like RRR was a big thing 2 years ago. I finally watched that like last year. I don't know. I don't think I particularly care for modern Bollywood film. This was just really long and boring. I know it's like, oh, you got all to that just to tell me that the movie was boring. Yes. I was bored shitless by like hour one. It starts out with a cool scene of a hyena kind of getting into this town and causing havoc, and our hero having to stop it without killing it, you know, without killing it with weapons. And, like, there's a whole fight sequence in his, like, coffee house slash restaurant where he fights all these guys hand to hand, and he has to use a gun, defend his daughter, and it's so fucking just, ugh. It's so dull. It's dull as dishwater. And then I kind of went from that to kind of watching something. I just wanted to kind of watch something different. I hadn't seen it. I watched Two Evil Eyes, the Argento Romero anthology film, and I enjoyed that. I know a lot of people kind of were like, oh, you know, the Argento film, you know, half is better than the Romero half. But I think they're both well-suited. You know, you can definitely tell who's directing what. It's not like, you know, Argento is definitely doing like some kind of like, you know, murder mystery whodunit. And Romero is, you know, kind of doing a straightforward adaption of this Poe piece. Another one we watched on Shudder. And it's really good. I really liked it. I don't know. I don't know why it took me so long to finally sit down and watch it, but I really enjoyed for what it was. I wish it was more. Like they said, Carpenter was supposed to be a part of it, or Stephen King was supposed to be the third part. But like, I kind of am fine with them having an hour for each film, kind of just a 2 hour film, and have two films kind of split down the middle. I liked it. Laying Out with the Devil, we're going to talk about later. Greatest Beer Run Ever. This is the new Peter Farrelly film from last year that's on Apple. I watched this through Plex because I'm not paying for every fucking streaming service. This is actually based on a true story of a guy named John Chickie Donahue, who was, you know, he had served in the military earlier before Vietnam. And he, a bunch of his buddies living in the neighborhood in New York that he lived in, were either enlisted or were drafted into Vietnam. And he decided to bring them beers as a thank you. So he got a job as a, there's a good book about it, which I've read portions of online about the exact story. Is that he got a job as a merchant marine to go to Vietnam to smuggle in Pabst Blue Ribbon and give each one of his pals beers, which is cool, right? And Verily takes this kind of thing and makes it this kind of comedic, because it is kind of a funny idea, like have this kind of guy who really shouldn't be there, but has a little bit of sense of like how the world is and what he's doing, and kind of being pushed into doing this because of all of the, you know, the anti-war demonstrations happening around that time. So he decided to do it as like a thank you, as a well-wishing, you know, just so the guys he knew. And he knew where they all were because everybody was writing letters back and forth to each other. So he knew where they were stationed at the time. So he would go from place to place. And he actually did it. He actually went from place to place. The problem with the thing is that it tries to, it definitely feels like, because Farrelly made that Green Book a couple years ago and he got an Oscar for it, right? And it seems like he's like, okay, my next picture is going to be just something like that, with kind of more, you know, it's almost kind of like Green Book. Green Book is a very funny film that, you know, it's got funny moments to it that takes this very serious bit of history. You don't know what the Green Book is. The Green Book is a book that was handed out to black musicians and performers when you're working in the Deep South where you can actually stay without having being accosted by whites and whatnot. It's only black-owned restaurants, black-owned motels and hotels, or hotels that will take you without having, without treating you like shit, you know, and kind of take it and make it humorous yet kind of political yet kind of, you know, maudlin story about this black piano player who's being driven around by this Italian white guy played by Mortensen, you know, and the kind of coming in and out of, you know, racist, you know, Deep South. You know, I don't get why he won an Oscar for that. I mean, good for him, but he definitely tried to, like, replicate the magic with this film, but it just doesn't work. I liked it for the most part, but the last, like, 45 minutes kind of just really, you can feel where they're trying to push the fucking, the buttons on the people who are watching this in the screen, which I don't think it ever came in theaters. I think I went right to Apple TV. So, boo. I don't know. I thought it was fine. Zac Efron, Russell Crowe is in it. Bill Murray makes a small cameo. But it's an okay film. Nothing worth... Again, I watched this on Plex because I'm not paying for all these services. Inferno, we already talked about. I like Inferno a lot. I watched a documentary on Earl Hornsby from 97 called The Man, The Myth. And this is like a 90-minute documentary. Very basic, kind of cheap, almost like TV-made documentary about the man and his life. So it starts from him being, you know, pretty much in a, you know, born of a mother who really couldn't take care of him. She was so poor that she couldn't take care of him, that was adopted by this older couple who he took the last name of Hornsby, and he became this self-made man in film. And the kind of that area of late 70s, early 80s, kind of drive-ins and grindhouse and kind of driving your film from place to place to kind of make money. And he made a really good life with it. He was in films for almost a decade, a little more a decade, I think 75, 76 to 87, 89. So a little over a decade, made a handful of films, maybe about 12 or 13, and kind of just, you know, worked locally, shot all this stuff in North Carolina. You know, with local, local actors guilds and whatnot, kind of did it all local in-house and made some very unique and different films, very much of the time of kind of like exploitation and horror films. But it's fascinating. I saw this documentary first because I just, it on YouTube, it just kind of, because I watch a lot of silly shit on YouTube. And occasionally when it's like, oh, you know, you're watching all this, you should check this documentary out. I gave it a chance. It's, like I said, it's a little dull because it is this, you know, it's it's got interviews with him and people who were still alive at the time. People who had worked with him either behind the camera or in front of the camera. Family, friends. It talks about his, kind of talks about his little bit of a friendship. He had a friendship with Elvis. He made a film about Elvis like that that was made months after he died with the woman that Elvis was married to at the time. I don't know. I haven't been able to find that film yet. And he made a handful of 3D films. So it's like, okay, cool. And one of the films actually in this, these two that I talk about is one of those 3D films. It's just, it's a fascinating little documentary. So it made me go digging for his films. And I found the two I were talking about tonight, which are both on YouTube. And I was like, fuck it, let's just do it. And the last thing I watched was the Jen and Sylvia Saska's latest horror film, Festival of the Dead, which is on Tubi. It's actually a Tubi original. So take that for what it is. You don't know who the Saskas are. They're most known for American Mary. They've made a couple other horror movies in the last couple of years. They did that Rabid remake, which we talked about a couple last year, which I found awful as fuck. And they did a couple of things. Dead Hooker in a Trunk. They did the See No Evil 2 sequel. They did... an actioner with the big show, Paul White, called Vendetta, you know, just kind of blah, blah, blah. So this is their latest film. So this is now, okay. Let me be honest with you with this. I'm a big fan of Night of the Living Dead. Probably one of my favorite films of all time, right? And a film like this, stating that it is a sequel or kind of a sister sequel or something in the same vein, it's in the universe of Night of the Living Dead, is kind of somewhat intriguing to me, right? The fact that you state that the two of the characters, because there's a girl named Ash and her brother, are the grandchildren of Ben from the original film, and the festival they're going to, this music festival, is a festival that is done in honor every year of the incident that happened in 68. It's like, because first off, if you've ever watched that, Ben has never mentioned that he has a family. Ben has never mentioned anything in the film about having a family. He's pretty much on his own. I think in the 90s version of the film with the Tom Savini version, I think he does mention that he has a wife, but she dies in the car accident. So I don't know where they're coming from with this, right? Allegedly, I heard that they said that they got the blessing from the George Romero Foundation, but I haven't been able to find anything about that. If they did and they lied about it, it's a big bag of shit. But it's about this girl named Ash who her and her friend are stuck watching her brother while her parents go on this kind of mysterious trip. So the parents are gone. Her boyfriend, who's a complete shitheel, his friend, her sister, and his girlfriend come over the place and say, hey, we got tickets to this festival. But only got tickets for us and not your friend, which is pretty shitty. So the friend stays with the kid, with the brother, and she goes off. As they're heading there, they take a quick trick around the big lot. They get into a car accident. The sister and the friend get hit, get fucked up. They get stuck in the car. The rest of them kind of go to the festival to kind of find somebody to help them. And then, slowly but surely, you see at the beginning of the film, you see an asteroid land in the field, and, that's what's going to cause everybody. It's a very much kind of a Lovecraftian kind of thing where everybody's going to start turning into monsters and blah, 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 blah. It's awful. And I'm not saying it's awful because it's a Tubi film. I'm saying it's an awful because it's a really bad script. Or, like, what I was thinking is that they had a script about a zombie film at a weekend music festival. And they brought it to Tubi, and Tubi was like, yeah, that's cool. Why don't you add something to it to make it a little more, different to kind of stand out? And somebody maybe suggested, why don't you incorporate it into the Night of the Living Dead universe? And they're like, oh, there was, the main characters are black. Why don't we make, and the main character for that film was black. Why don't we just make them their grandkids? It makes no sense because it's like 55 years after the incidents, right? This was my last October, but there was a shooting in a music festival in Israel at the time, and they pulled it till like this week. It's bad. It's bad, and I can't say that on the actors. The actors do a good job on what they're given. They're all young actors. They're all doing their best. The screenplay is just laughably bad, especially all the kind of forced in bits about Night of the Living Dead. That, like I said, there's no way that, if you've ever seen it, Ben dies at the end of the film. Spoiler. But he never mentions having a family. And, the whole fact that they would have a music festival every year to kind of commemorate the incident in 68. It's like, why? It's all bad. And it's just like a mediocre film. And it makes me feel bad for the Saskas that they've kind of fallen this low from kind of having. And I know they have their fans. I'm not saying they don't. But they've had issues over the last couple of years with bullying and trying to steal people's scripts and get them copywritten before the writers knew about it so they could take full credit of it. And just being kind of shitty people. And I can understand why that's why the independent horror scene is kind of like in Canada is kind of like really kind of like pushed them to the back end. And now they're just picking up films wherever they can. Right. They didn't write this film. They didn't write their last film. I know that they made a film between these two, which looks like more like a softcore horror film than anything else. But that has not seen the light of day. I think it got a couple of festivals, but it's never been released. But it's just miserable. It's bad. I kept seeing them post about it and the fact that like, oh, if you guys want to see it, you're outside of the States, you got to get a VPN and download Tubi on your computers. Like, so they were pushing it really hard to get it aired to their whole faction of fan base outside of the States and Canada because Tubi only goes, certain places, and it's exclusive to Tubi. So it's like, you know, I find that a little weird that you're trying to not fuck the company over that paid you to make this film, but like you're trying to get as many people to see it as possible. I get that, but it's not worth your time. Not at all. Fuck no. And it's just, you know, it's mediocre. It's, I don't know. Fuck them. Fuck this movie. All right. We'll tackle Werewolf first. I actually found a trailer. Oh, both these films are on YouTube. So Werewolf and Dogs of Hell. I think it might be under the Rottweiler title, but you can look Dogs of Hell too, and I think it pops up. I will put links in the show notes for both the films. I think Dogs of Hell is also on Tubi, but I preferred watching this on YouTube because the quality is a better quality. It's a better looking film on YouTube than it is on Tubi, which is shocking.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, tin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pox disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
So, I know half you fucking people are driving in your cars, or you walk in with a headphone in your ear, or whatever, but you got a phone on you, right? Right? You can call the voicemail line for Motion Picture Massacre at 732-639-1435. Leave your missives, you know, have some seances and talk to the fucking dead. Have them complain about not having any Cronenberg episodes. Or, you know, if you have an idea for an episode and you want to badger me and bother me and drive me fucking nuts, do that on the voicemail line at 732-639-1435. So, thank you. Kill yourselves. Bye. I don't fucking know.
1, 2, 3, and... Well, people, I have to say, it's a long, long way from the Carolina Hills to Hollywood. So a story I will tell about a poor boy who did well. He was chasing down a dream like a poor boy should. He's gonna be a star on the movie screen. Gonna be a face everybody's seen. Going all the way, no in between. When a country boy is chasing down a dream. When a country boy is chasing down a dream. He made a lot of money with nothing but sweat and brains. Then he bought a movie camera and away we go. As the money kept rolling in, he bought movie lights and film. Where a pasture used to be, there's a studio. He's gonna be a star on the movie screen. Gonna be a face everybody's seen. Going all the way, no in between. When a country boy is chasing down a dream. Country boys chasing down a dream. He was chasing down a dream. Kinda like James Dean. He lived his life with the pedal to the floor. But he did what he had to do to make it all come true. Yeah, he lived that dream just like he said before. is gonna be a star on the movie screen. They're gonna be a face everybody's seen. Going all the way, no in between. When a country boy is chasing down a dream. When a country boy is chasing down a dream.
So these two films, not just produced and acted by the same guy, these are actually directed by another guy named Worth Keeter. And he worked with Oro Ormsby in a couple films. The two we're talking about tonight, and another one called Tales of the Third Dimension, which is a little fancy little film that came out the year after Dogs of Hell. But he also did, he directed Snapdragon, which is one of Pam Anderson's first films in the early 90s. He directed Unmasking the Idol, which sounds interesting as fuck. And what else? There's another film, Order of the Black Eagle, which sounds really cool. Along with a whole bunch of other things. I think he did Trapper County War, which looks fucking weird as fuck. But he directed both these films along with being the, along with having the production and acting skills of Earl Ormsby. So we talked about him already. We talked about the good old Worth Keeter. The thing is with this film, so Earl Ormsby plays Colin Glasgow, who is, we are in America in the, fuck, I don't know. The problem with this film is that it's definitely supposed to be like old age type of thing, but everything looks like, you know, all the costumes and everything look like costumes. They don't look legitimate. You know, everybody's wearing like, you know, suits and ties and, you know, the whole fucking full thing. And capes and the crap and riding on horseback. So Earl is brought to his family estate to kind of mourn the death of his father, who we see was, you know, in flashbacks and nightmares through Earl, was dying of congestive heart failure, but had kind of met his untimely death mostly by a evil priest who stabbed him with a silver sword because he had run out of his, you know, usefulness. While Earl is there on the first night, this priest and his kind of underlings kind of put a curse on Earl to turn him into a werewolf. Right. And it's like and Earl doesn't believe. He starts having these weird nightmares. We start seeing people get attacked by someone in first person. But Earl doesn't believe that that his family has had this lineage of werewolfism. From his grandfather to his father, now to him. And the only way it could be stopped is if he's killed Andor. And for some odd reason, this evil priest is using this family as kind of like his pit bull. It makes really no sense why. Because, like, why put somebody in? Like, I can understand, like, the whole concept of the curse in the original werewolf films, the Lon Chaney film, is that it was something that was handed down, like, either by you being bitten by like a like the head werewolf, kind of like vampirism. You know, you get bit by the main vampire, you become a vampire, and then so forth and so forth, right? But this doesn't make any sense. It's so goofy that this guy's using, he's turning these poor bastards into werewolves to kind of kill the people around town that are causing problems. It's like, okay, why don't you just do this yourself? or your cult members, instead of having some unsuspecting jerk be the problem. So Earl is roaming around trying to figure out what happened to his father and how he died. And people are saying, oh, your father was a werewolf. Ah, you know, he figured that out. It's like how, it's like his index finger is longer than the rest of his fingers. That's how we all knew he was a werewolf. It's like, okay, and you never tried to stop this? No, he just got old and died. He's like, okay. So he goes and he's discovering all this stuff about like his father and the past and like maybe who was involved in this. And it's just a goofy film. The best parts I love about this are the transformations, because it's very much that old school kind of filmmaking transmission. Like the first, not the launching, there's one before that where they show, actually no, now I'm thinking about it. It's a Dr. and Jekyll, Mr. Hyde film where they show the transform from Dr. Jekyll to Mr. Hyde, and it's one of those ones where they would, you know, kind of do a transition shot in between each transition of the transformation. So that's what they do this here, where we have a normal Earl in his getup, and slowly he transforms into this, you know, wolf beast. And it's that, you know, it's a guy in a full wolf mask with the hands, and he's just running around killing people. It doesn't look at all scary. It looks like, you know, Fido on hind legs in like an old timey suit. But like, I enjoyed the hell out of this film. And the thing is, it's one of these things where you're like, okay, I kind of get it. You see the cover of it on the old VHS cover, and it's a zoom in close up of the guy's werewolf face with his eyes bulging out. And you can definitely, I read some things that Earl did not like the process of doing the makeup. He thought it was tedious and annoying. And never wanted to do it again. So they only really showed it twice. And then there's a couple other scenes where we're in first person on an Earl, and he's kind of sleepwalking, killing people. And the kills are, you know, kind of mediocre because it's low budget. But they're fun because it's silly in that way. You know what I mean? That kind of goofy, kind of like, you know, we see blood splatter against the wall, and then we see a body dead with blood on its face. You know, that kind of like, we don't have the money to show the gore, but we have money to buy Curo syrup and put red food coloring in and toss it to a wall. And we can get away with throwing that on the wall because I own the building. You know, that kind of silly shit. You know, does it, you know, on the back of the box, does it say exactly what it is? You see what you get? Yes. Yes. And when you see, like, I would have loved to seen this in a video store. That fucking cover with the green werewolf above it, with this werewolf head, with this shocked werewolf face. It's like, oh, I want to see what the hell that is. It looks dumb as shit, but I want to see that. And now getting to see it now, it's just like, ugh. And it makes me, like, watching these two films in that documentary, makes me want, like, you know, Severin has made a bunch of box sets in the last couple of years. One for Andy Milligan, one for Al Adamson, one for Steckler. All these kind of regional, like, you know, independent monster mavers. I'd love to see them do an Earl Owensby set, because I'd love to see these films in like 2K restorations on Blu-ray, instead of the kind of shoddy VHS copies that are all on YouTube. But like, it's goofy and silly, and Earl Owensby is not one of the better actors, but you can understand that he had the money to kind of do this stuff. And he was like, you know what, I'm going to produce it. And these are pretty much vanity projects for himself, where he can just be the actor. And every one of these films is kind of a take on whatever big genre was at the time. And like, I guess monster movies were hot in the late 70s. Because he made a film, his first film was Challenge, which is a take on like Rolling Thunder, Standing Tall, The Farmer type, you know, like guy gets revenge for his family being murdered. You know, it's like a normal timid dude. I think he plays a senator or a guy running for Senate, and he loses everything, and then he goes on a rampage. But like on $1.85 rampage. You know. And cold tea. I love it. But I just like the kind of silliness of this, because it's, you know, this guy doesn't believe everybody's telling him, so he constantly, and for some reason he has like these where they're like, yo, you need to go to your father's grave and see that he's a, you know, there's like these other people who are telling him, yes, your father was a vampire, werewolf, sorry. Your father was, it could have been a vampire. It didn't really matter, but it's just, I guess it works better. It would have been funnier to see this guy. This Earl Owensby is this kind of very average looking kind of man from the 70s and 80s, kind of almost like Al Adamson in a weird way. But I think Adamson had a little more of a, what's the word, like carny kind of attitude for making films. And Earl kind of just was very kind of like by the book. We make this film, we make money, we go make another film. And he kind of, I guess, made enough money where he's like, I don't need to make any more films. And he's just like, okay, you know. And he's very kind of like milquetoast, like emotions. You know, he doesn't really show much emotions. He doesn't really kind of protrude. Like, not, he's not like cardboard. He definitely has a bit of emotion to it, but like there's like this whole thing with this one, with this woman that he's kind of, he has a thing for her, and he's trying to woo her while he's there kind of getting his father's stuff in order. And their relationship is just like completely, it's like if my little brother was dating somebody. You know what I mean? I just don't know where he's, first off, how this woman is interested in him. And he has the emotional state of like a sponge, a dry, husky sponge. And my brother will listen to this and get mad at me. I don't care. but it's just that kind of stuff. You know, everybody else around him, like the older man who's telling him that he's a werewolf, or his father's a werewolf, is practically like on the, you know, on the mount of hysteria. If we just got him up a little higher, he could jump off and be full hysterical loony. There are weird dream sequences that counteract with things that he's being told that he has to go and find out, like the whole index finger thing. He has his dream where he digs up his father's grave. And then he goes to the grave the next day and the grave has never been touched. But then he has this conversation with somebody that he dug up the grave, and you're like, no, you didn't. That was in your dreams. So you, like, what are you talking about? So certain things just don't match up. And I don't think Ormsby really gave a shit. Oh, it'll make sense to the end of the film. Who cares? Just go. Like, and Worth Keeter was just like, a good director. You know, he's not as pedestrian as his production, you know, his producer was, but he definitely knew how to push a film to the right direction, right? The action sequences with the werewolf are pretty fun. Even the first-person sequence is really fun. The last, like, half hour of the film where the werewolf is just going around killing everybody is pretty fun, and they actually spend their money. There's a scene where he's fighting a guy, and a guy has stabbed a sword through a door, and as he's fighting with him, he pushes him up into the door, and you see him dead. This guy dead with a sword through his chest, his stomach, and he's killed this woman all, you know, kind of off camera. But we see she's like bloody, and there's blood all over the walls, and you just have this werewolf running amok, killing everybody, and it ultimately comes to him kind of confronting, as a werewolf, confronting his, you know, the guy who's caused him this curse, and it's who will win? Will it be the evil priest? Or will it be our man Earl Ormsby in the werewolf costume? I mean, if you think about it, it's, you know, it's Earl. He won. But yeah, it's silly. I thought it was a good time. Well worth checking out if you want to, you know, spend a couple of minutes. On to the next film. Now, and because all these films are available on YouTube, there are trailer, so we're going to get to hear, I think this is the Rottweiler trailer, maybe the Rottweiler 3D trailer, I'm not sure, and we'll talk about his whole kind of stance on, you know, 3D and how we thought it was going to be this next wave, and kind of how you know, Jaws kind of killed it.
When Ormsby's films are dubbed in foreign languages for the overseas market, they tend to take on a new sophistication, as is the case of a good review he received from a New York critic for Dark Sunday, because the critic thought the picture was a film noir piece from France. Earl says, it's how you look at something. If you think it's sophisticated, it's sophisticated. If you think it's down home and redneck, well, it's that too.
Это не такой уж и секрет. Как сделать большую кучу денег, если вы действительно этого очень.
Det är fortfarande där ute någonstans. Jag såg det. Vi såg det. Fråga dem om du inte tror mig.
Para esta noche tendremos gente con ella. Tendrán multitud para mañana a la mañana. Entonces nos podremos preocupar acerca de quién les dirá que sacrifiquen.
Det blir de plå, en kan jag ting. Jag ser det blir plå här inte ens till lesa det.
Rottweiler is a terrifying experience.
It's just too dangerous to continue.
Nonsense, Mr. Fletcher.
For security reasons, we decided to use a civilian transport. No sense advertising.
Isn't this just a little extreme? Just to transport a bunch of dogs?
Rottweilers, sir. The breed supposedly dates back to the time of Christ.
That's a curious remark. If I'm to believe Fletcher's report on the destructive capability of these creatures...
You can believe it, sir. Any mistakes in the operation would be critical.
You've got the authority to stop this thing.
That's true, Mr. Fletcher.
A secret military project goes out of control when a truck loaded with nightmares releases its deadly cargo. Rottweiler.
Okay, the joke's over.
A new dimension in horror is about to erupt as the Rottweiler secret is unleashed. Rottweiler.
This girl wasn't killed for food.
Well, what in the hell's that leave us with?
Says it was dogs.
Dogs.
And he doesn't mean a pack of wild dogs.
Rottweilers. They were trained to kill.
Rottweiler. A government agent has the key. Only he can end the grisly destruction. But is he friend of man or Rottweiler? The screen goes berserk. Rottweiler.
I think I keep calling this Dogs of Hell, but it's Dogs, or Dogs from Hell. But it's Dogs of Hell, also known as Rottweiler 3D, which if you look in the film, there are certain sequences, like the head explosions, and there's like a scene early when we meet Earl's character of him throwing darts at a gun target, which are just clearly made of him throwing the darts, clearly made for the 3D whole spectrum. Directed by Worth Keeter, written by Thorne McIntyre, on the stars Oral Ornsby. And the thing is, I don't think anybody else, like, you know, everybody else in the film is kind of just, they worked locally, so it's mostly known about him. So Earl plays Hank Willis, who is the local sheriff of this small podunk town in North Carolina. We start the film with this military faction, these military men talking about this latest bit of kit that they have, which is a pack of Rottweilers, which have been trained to murder. Right. And the scientist who was put in charge of the training and his ability, where he's like, okay, well, yes, this is a great, you know, thing for you guys, but we should really not put it towards the, we should really not put it towards the overall, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not fully finished. And they're like, nah, fuck you. We're fine. We're going to put it off on this truck and we're going to bring it out to the world. While the truck is delivering its cargo, it crashes on a really windy road. The Rottweilers escape. They go into town. They start causing havoc. And then you have poor old fucking Hank stuck to try to stop this as best he could. This film, I think, is a lot more serious than Werewolf was. Werewolf just feels like this kind of giddy, silly kind of monster movie of the week type of thing. This film is definitely, like, I think the start of his. I think he made like 4 3D films in the 80s. And like in that documentary talking about The Man, The Myth, he talks about how Jaws 3D ruined the whole concept of 3D films because it was such a big, because there was a lot of low budget horror films and low budget exploitation films using the 3D aspect to kind of get more butts in the seats. Right. And when a company like Friday the 13th Part 3 was, I think, the year before, year after. But like a film like Jaws 3, putting in the aspect of 3D, like, and even the big once something starts, if you don't know, once something in the lower end tiers of productions, like, you know, Roger Corman, this or that, like when it's something they come up with and they run with, and then this big studio say, hey, well, we have all these small producers making something with this, like, let's say Nudie Cuties or Ruffies or films about the psychedelic underbody or the that kind of shit, they find it and they kind of run with it and they make their own versions of these exploitation films, right? And then they fuck everybody's fucking day up, and then the small production companies have to find something new to fucking make money on, because when the big boys come in, they run it dry, they run it fucking to the ground. So Earl said that, like, if I remember correctly, he said that it was just with them making this film kind of really just ruined the whole kind of concept of small independent companies being able to make decent 3D films for the market and get it out there. Because there's just a glut. And I think he kind of got in right before the glut started, but ultimately kind of, you know, got stuck in that glut because he made four films with the 3D concept. And this film isn't a film that you can, you know, I don't need to see the 3D version. I don't care for 3D. I don't even care for modern 3D where it's the, you know, it's not the red, blue polarized glasses. It's, you know, something where it's completely, you know, they've rechanged the whole concept. I don't need to see it. Just show me a film in it's in a good aspect ratio proper, right? And I was talking about how this film was on Tubi. For some reason, with Tubi, when you watch a film on Tubi, especially an old film like this, and they don't have any kind of updated versions of the film, and they're pulling from like an old, you know, clip, something from a pulled from a VHS, there's this weird kind of like smeared layer of like Vaseline on the screen with Tubi. And also, this the copy on Tubi is 5x9, and the one on YouTube is widescreen. So it doesn't it looks much better, and it doesn't look as fogged as the one on Tubi. So that's why I just go find the one on YouTube. These Rottweilers come in, and again, they use the first-person perspective because they don't particularly want to overdub people watching Rottweilers stand there growling and then jumping, and then we see puppets attacking people. But this is a much more vicious film because you have it's an animal attack film. Those films are always kind of more vicious than they need to be. And they think that it's like a bear at first, and it's killed. They're killing indiscriminately. They're killing couples. They're killing people out in the woods. So they think it's just an animal. And slowly but surely, the scientists, like they find out, the military finds out that the truck lost its cargo and burned. And the scientist says, okay, where in the area? And they go, okay. And the scientist goes out to find it because he has this device that he can use that may be able to stop them from killing. So he goes out and he gets to the town. He confronts Hank about this. And Hank's like, the only thing that's good that's going to stop whatever the hell this is this. And he pulls out this fucking cannon of a gun, right? There are scenes in this restaurant called The Underground, which is, I guess is the local bar restaurant, also mud wrestling event place, where Keeter constantly pans over this whole place and pans over to the bar, but kind of starts from one end of the from the restaurant to the other, and he constantly slowly slows down at the mud wrestling pit in the middle of the restaurant, which is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. And when you actually get like it's like a MacGuffin. Like, we're going to see this in some way. We're going to see a mud wrestling. And it's not the cute, sexy ones like you saw in those 80s action films and action comedies and stuff like that, where it was like, you know, two really cute girls fighting. And all of a sudden, like, when somebody gets in there and, like, it's so cute and stupid and tits come out and blah, blah, blah. No, this is like two women fucking beating each other to the death. And then some dumb yokel, some dumb fucking out of towner, drunk out of towner falls in and then they start beating the living shit out of them. Because that's their job. They're getting paid for the night to fucking fight and try to pin each other, not try to tear each other's tits out. They're being paid to fucking actually wrestle in this fucking mud pit, right? And whoever wins gets more money than the other chick. So like you dumb fucking out of towner coming in and thinking I could do this, they're whipping his ass, right? Right. And but then you have, like I said, you have people camping in the woods because it's kind of springtime. You have Earl's shitty fucking teenage son who doesn't want to listen to his father's mother and wants to be his own man. And it's like, oh, for fuck's sakes. And he's trying to get beer, kegs from the bar because it's the only bar. He's like, give me a couple days, I can get it. So you know that's going to happen. There's going to be a big fucking thing there, but there isn't because we kind of get resolved. There's a great sequence of, for some reason, there's a photographer and his models out in the middle of nowhere, like on the river, doing their photo shoot at night, and they all get massacred by the Rottweilers. It's actually a pretty cool scene because you actually see the dogs go out and attack people, and they use, you know, in between the dogs licking them to make it look like they're attacking them, and puppets. You see this bloodbath of these girls and this photographer. There's this religious group there that's kind of doing their summer retreat there, and you know, and they have to stop them from hanging out in the woods because somebody's going to get killed. But some of them get killed, and when the scientist shows up and Earl, and they have this conflict constantly going, and there's a really weird resolution at that. You think they would work together, but then there's a really nasty negative resolution at the end of that between the two of them, which is just bizarre. If you're not a fan of watching dogs get their heads blown off, you're not going to like this film, because Earl and his men pretty much just shoot the dogs in the head, and the heads pop off them like fucking balloons. And that was definitely probably part of one of the 3D aspects, because it's a tight shot of the head and then exploding. So like whatever pump, you know, the puppets they were using, they filled it with fucking cotton candy and gore and other shit and popped it like a fucking balloon. And that's rough because it's quick, but it's also like, oh, fuck, that's not what I want to see. This is the first time I've seen of the two of them. Out of the two of them, I would refer you to go see Dogs of Hell, because it's a fun, by the book kind of, animal attack feature. So, you know, I do want to do more of his films, because I think there's and I found a bunch on YouTube, so I'm probably going to do more of his films at some point. But this is definitely worth a good start, I guess you can say. But that I'm done. I don't know what else to tell you about it. Definitely worth checking out. And they're free on YouTube, so you can go find them. 732-639-1435 is the voicemail. If you like leaving me a message about anything I've talked about, or you want to suggest shit, or you want to talk shit, I don't care. I play it. Especially from people from beyond the grave. I'm all for it. 732-639-1435. And you can email me at motionpicturemassacre@gmail.com. motionpicturemassacre@gmail.com. With that, another fucking show's in the books. Thanks. I don't know. Before I shit myself. Goodbye.
Hey, Godzilla! It's over! You must forgive! Damn lizard! Oh!